Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
I've always enjoyed finding good deals online, and Facebook Marketplace had become my go-to place for bargains. One day, I stumbled upon a listing for a high-end laptop at a price that seemed too good to be true. The seller claimed to be moving out of town and needed to sell it quickly. The pictures looked legitimate, and the description was detailed. I decided to take a chance and messaged the seller. The seller, a man named Greg, responded quickly. He seemed friendly and eager to sell, but he insisted on meeting in person to finalize the deal. We agreed to meet in a quiet suburban neighborhood, which seemed safe enough. As I drove to the meeting spot, the excitement of scoring a great deal was mixed with a slight unease. It was late afternoon, and the sun was beginning to set. When I arrived, Greg was already there, leaning against his car with a laptop bag in hand. He greeted me with a smile, and I felt a bit more at ease. We exchanged small talk, and he handed me the laptop to inspect. Everything seemed to be in order. The laptop looked brand new, and it powered on without any issues. As I examined the laptop, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. Greg's demeanor began to change. He grew increasingly insistent that I make the payment immediately. His eyes darted around nervously, and his smile became more forced. "Look, I've got other buyers interested," he said, his tone growing impatient. "If you don't want it, I can sell it to someone else." I hesitated, my instincts telling me to walk away. But the lure of a great deal was strong, and I didn't want to miss out. I reached for my wallet, but my unease grew stronger. I decided to stall, asking him a few more questions about the laptop. "So, why are you selling it so cheap?" I asked, trying to buy some time. Greg's eyes narrowed. "I told you, I'm moving out of town. I don't have time to deal with this." I glanced around, noticing that the street was unusually quiet. There were no other people in sight, and the houses seemed eerily still. My sense of unease intensified. I decided to trust my gut. "Actually, I think I'll pass," I said, handing the laptop back to him. "Something doesn't feel right." Greg's expression darkened. He stepped closer, blocking my path to my car. "You're not backing out now," he said, his voice low and threatening. "I've already wasted enough time on you." My heart pounded in my chest as I realized the situation was turning dangerous. I glanced around, hoping to spot someone who could help, but the street remained deserted. I took a step back, trying to keep my voice steady. "I'm sorry, but I'm not interested anymore," I said, trying to sound firm. Greg didn't move. Instead, he reached into his jacket, and I caught a glimpse of something metallic, a knife. Panic surged through me, and I knew I had to act fast. "Hey, is everything okay here?" a voice called out from behind me. I turned to see an older man standing on his porch, watching us with concern. The presence of a witness seemed to unnerve Greg. He hesitated, his grip on the knife loosening slightly. I seized the opportunity to make a break for it. I sprinted towards my car, my heart racing. Greg shouted something, but I didn't look back. I jumped into the driver's seat, locked the doors, and started the engine. As I sped away, I saw Greg in the rearview mirror, glaring at me with a look of pure rage. I didn't stop until I reached a busy gas station several miles away. My hands were shaking, and my mind was racing with what had just happened. I couldn't believe how close I had come to being robbed, or worse. the experience left me shaken and wary of online transactions. I realized how easily things could go wrong and how dangerous it could be to meet strangers for deals. I reported the incident to the police, but there was little they could do without more information about Greg. The fear lingered long after that day. I found myself looking over my shoulder, feeling paranoid and anxious. The excitement of finding a great deal had turned into a nightmare that haunted me for weeks. I couldn't shake the memory of Greg's threatening eyes and the sense of danger I had felt. If there's one thing I've learned, it's to always trust your instincts and prioritize your safety over a good deal. Meeting strangers for online transactions can be risky, and it's important to take precautions. Always meet in public places, bring a friend if possible, and never let your guard down. The encounter with Greg was a stark reminder of the potential dangers lurking in the digital marketplace. It's a lesson I won't forget, and I hope others can learn from my experience. Stay vigilant, stay safe, and always trust your gut. Finding deals on Facebook Marketplace had always been a thrilling hunt for me. I'd scored some great items in the past, and when I saw a rare collectible for sale, I couldn't resist. It was a limited edition vinyl record, something I'd been searching for years. The seller, who went by the name Jake, was asking a reasonable price, and the photos looked legit. I messaged Jake, and he responded almost immediately. He seemed eager to sell, but also very cautious. He insisted that I pay a deposit to secure the item, explaining that he'd been burned by no-shows before. I hesitated but didn't want to lose out on the opportunity. After some back and forth, I agreed to...
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Save $100 on the Craftsman V20 6-Tool Power Tool Combo Kit, now at $199. No matter what the project is, Craftsman's high-quality, high-performance products empower you to build on. Stop by your nearest Lowe's store and check out the full line of Craftsman tools today. Valid through 6/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Send half the amount up front via a payment app. The next day, we arranged to meet at a park near my house. It was a public place, and I felt safe with the arrangement. As I walked towards the meeting spot, I couldn't shake a nagging feeling of doubt. Something about the situation felt off, but I brushed it aside, attributing it to my excitement. When I arrived at the park, there was no sign of Jake. I checked my phone and saw a message from him, saying he was running late and to wait by a specific bench. The sun was setting, and the park was gradually emptying. I sat on the bench, trying to stay calm, but the eerie stillness of the place was unsettling. 15 minutes passed, then 30. I sent Jake a message, but there was no reply. My anxiety grew as darkness settled over the park. I decided to call him, but the call went straight to voicemail. The realization hit me like a punch to the gut. I'd been scammed. Anger and embarrassment washed over me. I felt foolish for falling for such a simple trick. Determined not to let Jake get away with it, I started digging into his profile and the details he'd provided. The more I searched, the more suspicious it all seemed. His profile was sparse, with few friends and limited activity. I reported the scam to Facebook, but I knew the chances of getting my money back were slim. Frustrated, I joined an online group dedicated to exposing scammers on Facebook Marketplace. To my surprise, I found several posts about Jake. Other people had been duped by him too, and they shared their stories and information. Through the group, I connected with Sarah and Tim, two other victims who live nearby. We decided to team up and track Jake down. We pieced together what little information we had and discovered a pattern in his scam. He always used the same payment app and the same vague excuses. After weeks of sleuthing, we managed to trace one of Jake's recent transactions to an address in a nearby town. It was a long shot, but we decided to confront him. We drove there together, our nerves on edge, but fueled by a shared sense of justice. The address led us to a rundown house on the outskirts of town. It looked abandoned, but there were signs of recent activity, footprints in the dirt, a car parked out back. We knocked on the door, but there was no answer. Determined, we decided to wait and see if anyone showed up. As night fell, the tension grew. We sat in Sarah's car, parked a little way down the road, and kept watch. Around midnight, we saw a figure approach the house. It was a man, and he matched the description of Jake we'd pieced together from his online photos. We waited until he was inside, then approached the house again. This time, we knocked harder, more insistently. The door creaked open, and there stood Jake, looking startled and guilty. "What do you want?" he demanded, his eyes darting around nervously. "We know what you've been doing," Tim said, his voice steady but firm. "You've been scamming people, and we're here to make sure it stops." Jake's face paled, and he tried to shut the door, but Tim and I pushed our way inside. The house was cluttered and messy, a stark contrast to the tidy persona Jake had presented online. We confronted him with the evidence we'd gathered, and he knew he was cornered. "I'll pay you back," he stammered, panic in his voice. "Just don't call the police." We recorded the entire confrontation, making sure we had proof of his confession. Jake handed over the money he'd scammed from us and promised to stop his fraudulent activities. We left, feeling a mix of triumph and relief. The experience was harrowing, but it taught me a valuable lesson about the dangers of online transactions. I was lucky to have found allies in Sarah and Tim, and together, we managed to stop a scammer in his tracks. But the fear and anxiety of that night lingered, a reminder of how easily things could have gone wrong. I've always been cautious about meeting people from online marketplaces, but I never thought a simple transaction could turn into a nightmare. I was looking to sell a vintage camera that had been sitting in my closet for years. It was a beautiful piece, and I knew it would fetch a good price. After listing it on Facebook Marketplace, I received a message from a man named Tom, who seemed genuinely interested. Tom's profile looked normal enough, photos of him with his family, posts about his hobbies. We exchanged a few messages, and he seemed friendly and respectful. We agreed to meet at a local cafe during the day to complete the sale. I felt confident that everything would go smoothly. The day of the meeting arrived, and I drove to the cafe with the camera carefully packed in its original case. It was a busy afternoon, with people coming and going, which reassured me. I found a table near the window and waited for Tom. He arrived a few minutes later, a middle-aged man with a warm smile and a friendly demeanor. He introduced himself and sat down across from me. We made small talk for a while, and he seemed genuinely interested in the camera's history and condition. "I've been looking for one of these for years," Tom said, examining the camera closely. "It's in fantastic shape." "I'm glad you like it," I replied, feeling a sense of relief. The transaction was going smoothly, and Tom seemed like a decent guy. We completed the sale, and Tom handed me the money. We shook hands, and I watched as he left the cafe, feeling satisfied with how everything had gone. Little did I know, my ordeal was just beginning. That night, I received a message from Tom thanking me for the camera. I replied politely, thinking nothing of it. But then the messages kept coming. He asked about my interests, my job, and my family. At first, I responded out of courtesy, but his questions became increasingly personal. "Do you live alone?" he asked in one message. That question sent a chill down my spine. I decided it was time to stop replying, But Tom didn't take the hint. He continued to send messages, each one more intrusive than the last. I blocked him on Facebook, hoping that would be the end of it. A few days later, I noticed a car parked near my house that I didn't recognize. It was there when I left for work in the morning and still there when I returned in the evening. My anxiety began to build, but I tried to convince myself it was just a coincidence. One night, as I was watching TV, I heard a noise outside. It was a faint tapping, like someone was knocking on the window. My heart raced as I slowly approached the window and peered outside. There, standing in the shadows, was Tom. I froze, my mind racing with fear. How did he find me? What did he want? I grabbed my phone and called the police, my hands shaking. Tom remained outside, his eyes fixed on the window. He didn't move or say anything, just stood there watching. The police arrived quickly, but by the time they got there, Tom had disappeared. They took my statement and advised me to stay vigilant. They promised to keep an eye on the area, but I knew they couldn't be there all the time. The fear and anxiety became a constant presence in my life. I installed security cameras around my house and avoided going out alone. But the sightings continued. I would catch glimpses of Tom's car parked nearby, or see him standing at a distance, always watching. One evening, I returned home to find a note taped to my front door. It read, "I just want to talk." My blood ran cold. I called the police again, but they couldn't do much without more concrete evidence. Feeling desperate, I decided to confront Tom the next time I saw him. A few days later, I spotted his car parked down the street. Gathering my courage, I walked over and knocked on the window. He rolled it down, a twisted smile on his face. "What do you want from me?" I demanded, my voice shaking. "I just want to be friends," he replied, his tone disturbingly calm. "I feel a connection with you." "There is no connection. Leave me alone, or I'll get a restraining order," I said, trying to sound assertive. Tom's smile faded, and a cold, hard look took over. "You can't stop me," he said quietly. "I'll always be watching." I backed away, my heart pounding. I rushed back to my house and called the police again, finally taking the step to file for a restraining order. The legal process was stressful, but I knew it was the only way to protect myself. The restraining order was granted, and for a while, things seemed to calm down. Tom's sightings became less frequent, and I started to feel a bit safer. But the fear never fully went away. I always felt like he could return at any moment, watching and waiting. The experience left me with a deep sense of vulnerability and paranoia. The simple act of selling a camera had turned into a nightmare that haunted me long after it was over. I became more cautious about online interactions, always wary of who might be on the other side of the screen. If there's one thing I've learned, it's to be extremely careful when dealing with strangers online. Always meet in public places, never share personal information, and trust your instincts if something feels off. The digital world can be a dangerous place, and it's important to stay vigilant and protect yourself. Selling items online had become a part-time hobby for me. I enjoyed the process of decluttering and making some extra cash. One day, I decided to sell an antique vase that had been in my family for years. It was beautiful, but it didn't match my decor, and I thought it deserved a home where it would be appreciated. I listed it on Facebook Marketplace, and within hours, I received a message from a potential buyer named Lisa. Lisa's profile picture showed a cheerful woman in her 40s. And her message was polite and straightforward. She asked if the vase was still available and if she could come by to see it. I agreed, and we arranged for her to visit my home the next evening. It seemed like a normal transaction, and I had no reason to suspect anything out of the ordinary. The next evening, I prepared the vase for display, making sure it looked its best. As the sun set, casting long shadows through my living room, I felt a slight unease. It was the first time I was allowing a stranger into my home for a transaction, but I reassured myself that everything would be fine. Lisa arrived right on time. She was friendly and seemed genuinely interested in the vase. We chatted for a bit, and she admired the craftsmanship and history of the piece. Everything seemed to be going smoothly until she asked if she could take a closer look at it in better light. "Do you mind if we step outside?" Lisa asked, her smile unwavering. "I'd love to see the vase in natural light before making a final decision." I hesitated, but her request didn't seem unreasonable. I agreed, and we stepped out onto the porch. Lisa held the vase up, turning it slowly to catch the fading light of the day. As she did, I noticed a black car parked across the street, its engine running. The unease I had felt earlier returned, stronger this time. Lisa handed the vase back to me with a satisfied smile. "It's perfect," she said, reaching into her purse. "I'll take it." Relieved that the transaction was nearly over, I accepted the cash and handed the vase back to her. Lisa thanked me and walked to the black car, which I assumed was hers. As I watched her leave, I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. Later that night, as I settled into bed, I replayed the events in my mind. There was something about Lisa's demeanor and the presence of the car that didn't sit right with me. I tried to dismiss my paranoia and drifted off to sleep. Around 2 a.m., I was jolted awake by a loud noise. It sounded like something had fallen in the living room. My heart raced as I got out of bed and tiptoed towards the sound. The house was eerily silent, and the darkness seemed thicker than usual. I reached the living room and found nothing out of place. I was about to turn back when I noticed the front door was slightly ajar. Panic surged through me. I was certain I had locked it before going to bed. I quickly shut the door and locked it, my mind racing with fear. I checked the windows and doors again, ensuring everything was secure. The thought of calling the police crossed my mind, but I convinced myself that it was just a coincidence. Maybe I had forgotten to lock the door. But as I lay back in bed, I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. The next day, I tried to go about my usual routine, but the events of the previous night lingered in my mind. I decided to message Lisa to make sure everything was all right. I wanted to confirm that the transaction had been legitimate and that my paranoia was unfounded. To my surprise, Lisa's profile was gone. It had been deleted or deactivated. A chill ran down my spine as I realized I had no way to contact her. The car, the strange request, the open door, it all seemed too coincidental. Days turned into weeks, and the sense of unease never fully left me. One evening, as I was returning home from work, I noticed the same black car parked a few houses down. My heart pounded as I walked past it, trying to appear calm. The windows were tinted, and I couldn't see inside, but I felt eyes on me. I hurried into my house and locked the door, peeking through the curtains. The car remained there for a while before driving off. The sightings became more frequent. Sometimes, it would be parked near my workplace, other times outside my home. Always watching, always waiting. I decided to install security cameras around my house, hoping to catch a glimpse of who was behind the stalking. The cameras provided some peace of mind, but the fear remained. Every time I saw the black car, my anxiety spiked. One night, I finally caught a break. The cameras captured a figure approaching my house and trying to open the front door. The footage wasn't clear, but it was enough to take to the police. They took my case seriously and promised to keep an eye on my neighborhood. Despite the police involvement, the fear lingered. The black car stopped appearing, but the damage had been done. I felt violated and vulnerable in my own home. The simple act of selling an antique vase had turned into a nightmare that kept haunting me. The experience was a harsh reminder that not everyone is who they seem, and even the most innocuous interactions can have sinister undertones. I became more cautious, always meeting buyers in public places and never letting strangers into my home.
Hey, baseball fans, it's time to swing big on your bets this season. Step up to the plate with an odds boost token from BetMGM, an official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. No opt-in is required. Just log into your BetMGM account to receive your odds boost token. Then, place a bet on any MLB game and activate your token. If your boosted bet hits, you'll score a bigger payout, no matter the showdown. BetMGM is your betting home for baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotion offer not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. For Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary and expire in 1 to 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint or stain project, saving is at the top of your to-do list. Save now with buy one, get one half off select paints, stains, and primers from top brands like Valspar, HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams, and Cabot via Visa gift card rebate. Find more Memorial Day deals now at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 5/15 through 5/28.